Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Dalet. So, where were we on daf Dalet so that we can get right smack bang into the Gemara's question at this stage? Basically, we were trying to figure out how do we get Shnayim Shehin Arba in our Mishnah. So remember that we basically have 8 cases with 16 participants, so to speak. In other words, each one of those 8 cases has 2 people involved, which means that in every single one of those cases, we really have to deal with the chiyav or the ptur of 2 people. So taking the cases of chiyav, for instance, in other words, if the ani is chayav and the balabayit is patur, that's because the balabayit did not do neither akira nor hanocha. He was just the object that the akira or the hanocha, depending on the case, was done with. Vice versa, in the opposite case, if you have the balabayit being chayev and the ani being potter in the opening cases, the case of the ptur is also a ptur where neither akira nor hanocha was done. Okay, now let's take the other cases. All of the cases where both sides are potter involve doing something on both sides, because in the case where, let's say, the balabayit does the putting of something into the hand of the ani, it's true that he's potter, but he did the akira. The ani did the hanocha. In the case where the ani put something into the hand of the balabayit, it's vice versa. The ani did the akira. The balabayit did the hanocha. Every single one of those cases involves 2 individuals by definition. And there's no way to hide from the fact that it involves 2 individuals. So all in all, if you have 8 cases with 16 participants, you're going to have to deal with the ptur and the chiyav. If you've got a chiyav of 4 cases, then you've got a ptur of 12 cases. So how did we manage to answer the Mishnah by saying, well, over here we're talking about Shnayim Shein Arba Bifnim and Shnayim Shein Arba Bachutz, which gives us a total of 8 cases, as opposed to the Mishnah in Shavuos, where over there we have only the discussion of the chiyuvim, so it's Shnayim Shein Arba. Doesn't make any sense. And that's today's kasha in the Gemara. Omer le Rav Matna la Abaye. So we're 3 lines up from the bottom of Beis Amud Beis. Omer le Rav Matna la Abaye. It makes no sense what you're saying. How can there only be 8 cases? I mean, there are 12 cases. Says Abaye, what do you mean there's 12 cases? I mean, if you're going to be so pedantic about it, so then you've got to talk about 16 cases, right? How do you get 12? So then the Taimich, I mean, if you are not filtering the cases to discuss where the Ptur is worth mentioning, so then why didn't you ask me if you've got, how do you get only 8 cases? You've got 16 cases. I mean, there's no way to avoid the fact that there's 16 cases, for God's sake. Says Ramasta, come on. I mean, that doesn't bother me. Hello, Kasha. Obviously, the cases where the man didn't do a darn thing, which are the cases where the opposite to the one who was chayev. So if you've got 2 cases where an ani is chayev, then by definition, since he's chayev, he did everything. He did the akira and he did the hanocha, which means that the person shekenegdo, the one connected, the ani obviously the balabayit, the one connected the balabayit is the ani. If one is chayev, then by definition, the other one didn't do anything. I mean, the fact that I happen to have used his hand in which something was stuck is no difference than using his refrigerator and taking it out of his fridge and taking it to Rosh Hashanah. What's the difference if it's his hand or a fridge? You're going to be mechayev of the refrigerator. In this case, his hand is basically a shelf on the wall, right? So I'm not interested, no need for a mishnah to tell me that you're putter in that case where you didn't do anything. But there are a total of 12 cases that actually involve both of the individuals. And therefore, I don't understand why we're leaving out the other 4 cases. So Baba Deresha, which is putter and to say putter, I mean, it's a little bit silly. I mean, it means you're mutter, right? You didn't do anything. You just stood still and the other guy took something out of your hand or put something into your hand. You didn't participate in any way. Okay, that I understand we do not need to mention in the Mishnah. We're not going to include those cases. But where you've got the latter cases, you clearly have another 8 cases with 2 participants one of whom did the Akira and one of whom did the Hanocha. And if you're going to call doing only Akira or only Hanocha potter, which it is, but it's certainly prohibited, so then those cases are potter but usser, and it should have listed them. So Baba the Sefer, the potter aval usser. Now that is a problem. Now here we have a little bit of popping out of our sugya to ask about the concept of potter umutter. Is there really such a thing called potter umutter? But before we even get to that question, as Tosis points out, maybe the reason that we do mention those first cases, I mean, it's not really potter and mutter. Are you allowed to put something in your hand which will enable someone else to be mechalel Shabbos? Isn't that sort of lifnei iver? And even if it's not lifnei iver technically, because remember that technically in order for something to be lifnei iver, the act could not have been accomplished without your help. Over here, obviously, you could have accomplished it without your holding it in your hand. You could put it down on the floor. It would have still been the same thing. So it's not technically lifnei iver. But still, aren't you supposed to complain and prevent people from doing isurim? I mean, to sit there placidly while the other guy's being over an isur d'oraisa and using your hand, I mean, you should be yelling at him. So, I mean, maybe that's why it wouldn't be called potter umutter completely, in which case a pious point would be well taken. So Tosfos says, look, the cases do not have to be, and when you're talking about the chiev of one, guys, please cool it. When you're talking about the chiev of one and the ptur of the other, you might as well be talking about a goy. In other words, the balabayit could be a goy as far as the ani is concerned. The ani could be a goy as far as the balabayit is concerned. And that would indicate exactly the same case, the same din, because all we're trying to say is that taking out of a hand is considered to be the equivalent of Akira. So it doesn't matter if it was a goy's hand. Okay, so over there, there would indeed be nothing at all to discuss. And in terms of the principle would be clear. That's what Tosis explains. In any event, our question is, to say that the Mishnah was talking about potter and usser, as opposed to potter and mutter, is problematic. Why? Because Amar Shmuel, kol peturi de Shabbat, potur aval usser. By definition, wherever the word patur is used, instead of the word mutar, it means that it's only patur, meaning you do not have to bring a carbon chatas. But it would certainly be asur mirabonan, otherwise why would we call it patur? There's three cases where that's not true, and only three. Bar mi'an itlat, where it's not only patur, but it's actually mutar. The three cases are as follows. Tzedat zvi. Somebody sits down in front of a door, trapping a deer inside of the house. He was not allowed to do that. I come along, and I sit behind him in the same door. I did not trap the tzvi. The tzvi was already trapped. Now the other guy gets up. Did I do anything wrong in staying there? Must I get up in order to avoid having my body being the entrapment of the tzvi? No. The tzvi was already trapped, so I did not do any act of trapping. So over there, when it says the second guy is potter, it doesn't mean he's potter. It means there was nothing else for him to do. That's potter umutter. The other case was somebody traps a non-deadly snake, but it's still a snake that can hurt with its poisonous bite. It's not considered to be a sakanat nefashot that would allow me to do it on Shabbos. I go ahead and I trap that snake. I am allowed to trap that snake. Why? Because remember that the act of trapping, and this is wonderful that we bring this up right here at the beginning of the Masechet, a malacha does not consist of an act. A malacha consists of a melechet makshevet, as it's expressed in the Midbar in the Mishkan, which means that the act has to have a particular purpose that was defined by me initially, that's consistent with the way that act was done in a constructive way in the Mishkan. Over here, when I trapped that snake, I did not need that snake. And that is called a malacha she'en tzricha l'gufa. Trapping is I trap a fox to get its skin. I trap a deer to eat it. Over there, the need for the malacha is for the item that's trapped. Over here, I did the malacha of trapping to prevent the item that's trapped from getting out. That is not the act of trapping at all, if you hold that malacha she'ena tzricha l'gufa is pater. In this case, even though normally the Rabbanan Asr are doing an act which looks like a malacha, even though the intent was different than in the malacha, and that would be Asr. In this case, in order to avoid that snake from biting zazzles, or better sit still because it can get your toe at any moment, that is considered to be actually mutter, because in order to avoid the pain, they allowed you to do it. And the other case is, if you've got a blister, you're allowed to lance the blister. Why? Because binyan, making, constructing openings, is only where an opening is meant to be for the purpose of there being an opening that is going to stay there. Over here, you don't need the opening in your skin, I guarantee you. All you want to do is get rid of the pus. So therefore, it's also not considered to really be a malacha. And since it involves pain, where this blister is driving you crazy, and it may be actually plain painful if it's that type of a blister, so in that case, it would be mutter l'chatchila. But Shmuel doesn't list the case of our Mishnah, of the one who stood still and allowed the other one to take it out of his hand. So why are you telling me that it's pater and mutter? Maybe it isn't. Oh, come on, guys. Obviously, Shmuel isn't there to tell you every single case of pater or mutter. If a guy didn't do anything, he didn't do anything. I don't have to tell you that that is a case of pater or mutter. Shmuel is talking about pater even when you did something. Pturi de Kavid Maaseh. But well, you didn't do anything. There may be thousands of examples of that throughout Shas. Shmuel's not discussing something that a 2-year-old understands. So please, can we get back to the question? Okay, all right. So the question is, Mikomakom, bottom line, do we or do we not have a total of 12 cases? And you're saying we have a total of 8 cases. I don't understand. You're absolutely right. However, the Mishnah is referring only to a certain set of potter. And what is that? Where the potter needs to be discussed because it's the type of potter that if you would have completed the act, you would have actually ended up being chayev for a chiyev chatas. Now that I mention. Therefore, as Rashi understands it, where I did an akira, and theoretically, had I continued the act and also done the hanocha, I would have been chayev chatas. There the Mishnah is saying, look, doing the full act or doing the beginning of the act, where you might end up completing the act, those things are shnayim shein arba, which is equals 4, which is 8. Why? Because we do not want you to be involved in a hotzah. Not the entire hotzah, and not the start of hotzah, where you say, well, I'm going to stop. And if you don't stop, so then you're involved in the actual isra. Midrabon, and they answered that because you're boli de chatas. That we mentioned. The fact that you did a hanocha, which you're not supposed to do because that's part, that's the ending of a malacha, but you'll never be chayav achatas only doing a hanocha, that we don't mention. So basically the interrelationship between the chiyav and the paturi is in the cases that the patur is meaningful because it could have been otzi lidei chiyuva. That is Rashi's approach. Now I mentioned to you that the Mishnah is very difficult to parse, because there's so many different ways that I could parse it. So Rashi is taking that the Gemara's meaning is that we talk only about Akira and not about Anocha. Now, there's problems with that, of course, because it creates an imbalance in the cases, which until now were two Anochas, or rather were two Yitzias and two Achnosas for the Balabayas and the Ani. Once you look at it this way, you're skewing it, and it gets to be 3-1 and 3-1. For Ani and Balabayan, instead of basically the same case. And Tosfos doesn't like that. Now, Rashi suggests another way to parse the Mishnah, which he was mekabel from his Rabbeim, but which he obviously doesn't like. And that was that the one who starts is the one that we're mentioning. So in the case where somebody put their hand out into the other Rishus, even if they put that hand out empty, for the other person to fill, that's the guy who started up. So we're talking about the patur of the guy who started up. Tosfos has a beautiful pshat, which is actually the pshat of the Riva, and is based on the Yerushalmi. And it's a very, very lovely pshat. According to him, the meaning of the Ati Lidei Chiyuv Chatat is the one who is putting his hand in or taking out, but of course with something in it. Why is that? Because we are contrasting both cases precisely. So in the case in the ratio, you have a chi of chatas, in that case. In this case, he did exactly the same thing, but he's putter because somebody else put it into his hand. So that is very valuable to indicate. And indeed, the Yerushalmi, he says exactly the case, because it says, lo choshev el ptur shel oto shekenegdo chayev lamala in the beginning. So it's only the ptur keneged achiyuv, which means that we talk about exactly the same case, lechiyuv, where you were involved in every last part, and exactly the same case, bliftur, except that someone helped you with one of the parts. Either for taking it out of your hand at the end or for putting it into your hand at the beginning, whatever it is, it's precisely the same case, which keeps the Mishnah beautifully balanced. And that makes a great deal of sense, and that's the way the Yerushalmi has it. Okay, let's continue now into the main issue. So, therefore, we're talking about the cases. We now understand the cases, however we understand it, which is not as important as the next question. The next question, we'll see that this Mishnah raises, what about that Nachash? Raises some of the most fundamental thoughts about the nature of Malacha. Well, it means we've already managed to introduce the question of Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa and its relationship to Yisur D'Rabbanan. There's another serious problem over here. And that problem is, how do we know that a Malacha is defined by an individual doing a Malacha? And that the malacha is not defined by the malacha having been done. In other words, if two people would be involved in doing that malacha, couldn't we look at it that they both together managed to do a malacha? And that would be mechayev then. So asks the Gemara, it's all very nice to say if you split the cases in such a way that we look at each person individually. But ha'itavita malacha bibinayu, between the two of them, they did do a malacha. Why is that enough? Not enough to be mechayev in all the cases where it says pater. That is the basis of a braita. Rebbe Omer, that this is merumas in the pasuk. Ve'im nefesh echat techete bishkaga me'am ha'aretz. Ba'asota achat mi'mitzvot Hashem asher lo te'asena ve'ashem. This is the introduction to the din of a korban chatas. Note, says Rebbe, that it says ba'asota. Ba'asotah means to do the entire melacha with a mapike. Ba'asotah, do it in its entirety, which means ha'oset kula velo ha'oset miktzata. So being the one who does the beginning or does the end, that is not enough to be mechayev you. And from there we learn, shnayim va'asuota, yochid va'aseota chayav. But if you need two people to complete the melacha, you're potter. Now, this double lashon over here is most confusing, as it should be, because it's meant to be ma'orer you to the fact that there are two completely different ways that two people can do a malacha. One is where malacha consists of parts. One person could do the akira, one person could do the hanacha. But what about where a malacha doesn't consist of parts, but requires two people to complete it, perhaps because an item is too heavy for one person to do? So then, between the two of them, they both did the entire malacha. We're going to see later that we're going to need a pasuk to make it clear that both of those ways of doing a partial malacha are potter, and it isn't even necessarily so. Because if one of the partners could not have done it without the partner, then the modality of asiyas malacha included the two people who do it. So we have to take all of that into consideration, which we'll get to later on. But meanwhile, we've introduced this beautiful concept of the relationship of the individual to the malacha, which again, the moment you read, even as a naive individual, please, David, Meisher David, mute yourself. Even as a naive individual, the moment that you read that Mishnah, this is one of the first things that strikes you, is the interrelationship of two individuals within the malacha. Now, Itmar Nami, Om Rav Chiya Bar Gamda, Nizrika Mipi Chabura, V'yamru Ba'asota, Yachid Shasa Chayav, Shnayim Shasua Peturim, which is very strange, because we usually do not have Amoroim as a proof to a bright, that's a little bit ridiculous, it goes the other direction, and therefore, There are two possible teruts, and the Rishonim give either that this braita never went through the filtering process of Reb Chiya and Reb Hoshaya, or that this is Nizrka Mipi Chabura, was a Chabura of Tanaim and not a Chabura of Amoraim. Boimine Rav Mirebi. Now we get to some very serious issues that are unavoidable from the Mishnah. Let me point out to you, we started discussing yesterday, what is the status of that hand? And we're very confused by that hand, because when the hand is in the Rishut HaYachid together with the Baal HaBayit, that taking something off of a hand is considered to be an Akira from Rishut HaYachid. But when that very same hand is stuck outside and the Ani takes something out of it, it says Beferish that the Ani is Pater, even though it's the same hand. Now, is the hand part of Rishus HaYachid, or is it part of Rishus HaRab? Now, obviously, we understand that there may very well be a big difference between a hand that's in the same Rishus of a body and in a different Rishus of a body, but then that leads us to question whether actually a movable individual is considered to be the basis of a act of Akira or Hanacha if he himself is the mover. In other words, maybe if somebody takes something off of me, I understand that he has taken it out of that rishus. But if it's been on me the whole time, and I just walk out with something that's been on me, I mean, is that an akira if I never picked it up in the first place? So let's say somebody puts it on my head. Would that be called an akira on my part? That's another question. Other issues that are raised is the fascinating possibility, which for the first time we meet here, even though we think we understand everything because now we know about Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid, it turns out that life is not that simple. And that in reality, there are four separate Rishuyos for Shabbos, which I mentioned to you may even be merumas in the way Rav is understanding Yitziyot HaShabbat Shtayim Shein Arba, but has a double meaning, that there are four Rishuyos of Shabbos. There's also, besides Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid, there's what's known as a Mokum Ptur, which is neither Rishut HaYachid nor Rishut HaRabim. And then there's a Rishus Derabbanan, which is called a Carmelite. So the hand, while we may have well established that it's not a Rishut HaYachid in the other Rishus, is it a Carmelite vis-a-vis an Issur Derabbanan? These are all the things that we're going to discuss today. And so Rav asked Rebbe, I would like to know, somebody loads you up. You didn't do a thing. You're just sitting still in the house. Somebody comes along, puts the cholent on your head, puts a bottle of Coca-Cola in your pocket, and then you walk into the outside to make a picnic. Was that considered to be an act of Otsah, and you did an Akira, or not? Mao, shall we say Akirat Gufo, Kakirat Chefetz Mimekot, Modami, Umechayev? Is the movement of your body, even though you never, ever picked up any of these things. I understand if you picked them up and moved out with them, that's the definition of Otsa. You never touched any of these things. Somebody put it on your head. So walking out with the cholent on your head and the Coke in your pocket, is that considered to be the equivalent of being oker the cholent from the stove and walking out with it, and you'd be chayev or not? By the way, I'm really being a bit misleading, because if you walk out with the cholent on your head, it's not considered to be derech hotza'ah. So anyway, you really wouldn't be chayev. You'd only be chayev on the Coke bottle. So don't take that too seriously. Omar Le, I understand your problem, because I'm going to address it right now. You're chayev, and it do not make the mistake of thinking that I should compare it to the case of the hand in the Mishnah. It's considered to be a chiyuv, but it's not similar to the yad. So in the Mishnah, we have a case where a yad is in a different rishos. So let's say you've got the ani who sticks his hand into the house. The Baal HaBayit puts it into that hand. What's the din when he puts it into that hand? He's potter. And the ani is potter. Why is the ani potter? Isn't it the same thing as somebody putting the cholent on him and his walking out with it? No. And I understood that that's what your problem was. There's a big difference between the two cases. And the case is different. Why? My taima. Because gufo naich, yado lo naich. The point is that your body is at rest in the reshus that you're taking out from. Therefore, in moving your body out of that reshus, you did a true akira, even though you never loaded up the cholent onto yourself. But the hand, when it is sticking into a reshus that is not the same as your body, cannot be viewed as being at rest in that reshus. It's not attached to that reshus. It can't manage to just stay there in the air forever in that reshus. And therefore, we do not see it, because remember, the nature of akira is to change the object's interrelationship with the space in which it's in. But if it is now on something like a spike, which is the equivalent of a hand sticking into another reshus, that is not called munach. And therefore, don't get confused by the case of the Mishnah versus the case that you raised, where your entire body moves out holding the chalent. So gufo naich, yodo lo naich. Amalei Reb Chiya l'Rav. Reb Chiya said to Rav, listen here, I told you, you just did something wrong, and I told you not to do this many times. You walked over to Rebbe, and you asked him a shaila about something that you were learning, which was in Masechet Shabbat, and Rebbe is not currently learning Masechet Shabbat. He's currently learning Kiddushin. You're not allowed to ask a question of the Rebbe when he's not learning the Masechet that you're learning. So he says to Rav Bar Pachti, you're the son of great people. Lo amina lecha, did I not explain to you that kikoi Rav b'ay Masechta lo teshayla b'masechta achrita? Because if he weren't fully holding in that Masechet, and don't give me this stuff, but he wrote it, for God's sake. Doesn't matter that he wrote it. He's currently not involved in it. And as the Rambam says, nobody can know everything at all times, even if he did write it. So if that's the case, you might have embarrassed him. Because let me tell you, it's a good thing for you. Rebbe is just this incredible Gavra Rabba. You would have embarrassed him. He would have answered you something and then realized that it was a mistake, because he might have jumped to the conclusion himself that it was the same as the hand. Thankfully, you were saved by the bell, because Rebbe is so great, you did not cause him any embarrassment. What he told you is absolutely correct, and it appears in a braita precisely as you raised the case. The Tanya, the same exact question. Is if somebody else put the cholent on you and put the coke in your pocket, is the same as the case, as in terms of its abstraction, as you yourself picking up the cholent or you yourself putting the coke in your pocket Friday in the middle of the day? That is not called an akira vis-a-vis Shabbos, because it wasn't a time of Isurei Hotzah. Therefore, it's exactly the same whether you did it yourself on Friday as whether somebody else did it to you on Shabbos. And it says beferish in the Braita that if you were holding a cholent from before Shabbos and you walk out with that cholent or with that coke on Shabbos, you would be chayav. So hotzian l'chutz b'shechashecha, chayav. And brilliantly, over there, the Braita understands and takes it for granted that you, oh, smart Talmud Chacham that you are, would have immediately compared it to the case of Yodo in the opening Mishnah. Therefore, the Braita has to state, because it's Eino Dome Le Yodo. Isn't that brilliant? The level of awareness that's assumed on the part of the listener. Lefish Eino Dome Le Yodo. You understand how many things the guy would have to have in mind to understand those words of Yodo? What are you talking about, man? It's just beautiful. Omer Abaya. Now Abaya raises the other wonderful point. What have we done now? We've established that a hand inserted into another reshus is not considered to be in that reshus, right? It's not only not in that reshus, the problem is it's not in the reshus where the body that it's attached to is either. That's clear from the Mishnah. Because, says Abaya, look, I mean, it's obvious that a hand inserted into another reshus does not have a din of reshus harabim. It does not have a din of reshus hayochid. It's not a reshus harabim that's obvious, because that I learned out from the case of the ani. The ani is in a reshus harabim. He sticks his hand into the house. The Baal Abaya takes out of his hand what is in the body that's in Rishus HaRabim and is now extended into his Rishus. What's the din? The Baal HaBayit is Potter. Why? Because he didn't take it out of Rishus HaRabim. If a hand was considered to be a Rishus HaRabim when it's attached to a body in Rishus HaRabim, the Baal HaBayit would be Chayev, but he is not Chayev. Furthermore, I also know that a hand that's extended from Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaRabim is not a Rishus HaYochid either. That I know from the case of the Baal HaBayit, because if the Baal HaBayit extends something into the Rishus of the Ani, which is Rishus HaRabim, and the Ani takes something out of it, he did not do an act of Otsah. So obviously the hand is not a Rishus HaYochid either. Now I'm flummoxed. Because, I mean, first I came to understand, as you said, in a Dom HaYada, that Yad is not considered to be in the Rishus where it is. Now I analyze the Mishnah, and I see it's also not in the Rishus where it is connected to the body. So what the heck is it? So, I mean, you're telling me basically that hand, if it's not in exactly the same place that the body is, cannot be viewed as Rishus HaYochid and cannot be viewed as Rishus HaRabim. Okay, so then that means you've got two possibilities. It's either a Makom Ptur or it's a Karmali. Now let's think about those other two Rishuyas for a moment. A Makom Ptur, Midyoraita, is anything that is not a Rishus HaRabim and not a Rishut HaYochid. Not to be a Rishut HaYochid is quite easy to define, because a Rishut HaYochid must have clearly delineated Mechitzot, or raised platforms, whatever it is, the equivalent of Mechitzot, that surround a place of Arba Tvachim in order to be Choshev as Rishus Bifnei Atzma. So it's easy to see something is not a Rishut HaYochid. Something is not a Rishut HaRabim in many ways. It could be not Rishut HaRabim because perhaps one of the requirements of Rishut HaRabim is that it actually be used by traffic. So if you don't have traffic going over it, it's not called a Rishut HaRabim. It doesn't have 600,000 people traveling along as it did in the Midbar. It could be not a Rishut HaRabim for a much more prevalent point, which is it's above 10 Tvachim from the ground. We learn later that Rishut HaRabim does not extend that high. So if that's the case, if it's neither one nor the other, it should be a Makom Ptur. A Makom Ptur means that there's absolutely no limitations on moving something from it into whatever Rishus you happen to be in, whether you are in Rishus HaYochid or Rishus HaRabim. The Rabbanan created an artificial fourth Rishus, which is called a Karmelit, in cases where it looks like a Rishus HaRabim, or looks like a Rishus HaYochid, which we'll get into the details later. And the question that I have now is, how do we look at that hand? Do we look at that hand as a Makom Ptur, in which case it has no implications whatsoever in terms of taking it in or out, or do we look at it as a Karmelit? And there's a big difference. Why would they have made it a Karmelit? Well, since this guy has put his hand out, which he shouldn't have, then if he is going to be forced to keep, okay, think you're so smart, put your hand out without doing a hanacha. Very nice. Keep it there. But let me keep it there. It's 10 hours till after Shabbos. Yeah? Keep it there. And mention it to your gym teacher, you idiot. And next time, don't do it. So that would be a knas, and the knas would be because the guy did such a thing, is sticking his hand out, even though he didn't intend to do the hanacha. And because of that, we gave his hand a din of a Karmelit, and he would now have to keep his hand out there. Oh, it's killing me. It's going to be out there for the rest of Shabbos, because he's not allowed to take something from a Karmelit and bring it back into the Rishus where he is. So that's what I want to know. Maushite Asaka Karmelit, Mikatsinan Rabbanan Lahadurin Legabe Olo. So is there a knas to bring it back? Tashma. Well, I think I can prove that. If his hand was full of fruit, and he just stuck his hand out the window, so one bright says he's not allowed to bring it back into the house. He's got to let it stand there all day. Now I'm assuming that this is an argument, and it's a simple argument. One bright holds that the Rabbanan made his hand to a Karmelit in order to make him suffer. Umar Savar Lavka Karmelit Damya, right? No, come on, not necessarily. I mean, what if everybody agrees that it is a Carmelite? And there would be a major difference, wouldn't there be? If he stuck his hand into Rosh HaYochid, which is being, into Rosh HaTzarabim, which is Lamata Me'asara Tvachim. So then he put his hand from Rosh HaYochid into Rosh HaTzarabim. It's just that he wasn't Meniach. But Kan Lamala Me'asara, what if he just put it outside of a window that was higher than Asara Tvachim, and therefore it would be a Makom Ptur? And the Rabbanan, why would they be angry at him for sticking his hand outside of a window if it's a Makom Ptur? A Makom Ptur is a Chatchilam to put your hands in and out. So they may simply be talking about two completely different cases, and you can't prove anything from there. Or, you know, I could tell you something else also. I could say, maybe both cases were Lamata Me'asara. Maybe a hand is not a Carmelite. And the question is, did the guy do anything wrong? Maybe one case is talking about that he stuck his hand out of the window while it was still Friday. And one, we stuck it out of the window when it was already Shabbos. So if it was already Shabbos, the Rabbanan said to him, oh man, you just did something that was not very nice. You stuck your hand out into Rosh HaSarabim, the Avir of Rosh HaSarabim, Lamata Me'asara. It's a good thing you didn't do Anocha, because if you would have done Anocha, you would have been Chayav a Karban Chatas, and we're not going to let you bring it back in just to teach you a lesson. No, wait a minute. Just the opposite. I mean, is it more reasonable to say that if the guy had stuck his hand out in the daytime, where even if he would end up saying, oh my God, I'm really getting tired, and he would let it go, he wouldn't be Chayav Achatas because he never did an Akira on Shabbos. He did the Akira on Friday. So over there, if the Rabbanan don't like the idea of people sticking their hands from one Rishus to another and bringing them back into the other Rishus, so over there you can say there's a Knas. But if it's talking about that the guy stuck his hand out, Misha Chashecha, what are you going to do? You're going to tell him, okay, you stuck your hand out after it was Shabbos, keep it out. You really think the guy's going to be able to keep it out? What if he says, these guys are insane, and he ends up throwing it down and bringing it back in, his hand, empty hand back in, and then he can be Chayav Achatos? So the Rabbanan shouldn't give a knas where that very knas is going to make a guy be over on Chilul Shabbos. Now, since it never occurred to anybody to take that into consideration, and instead everybody was looking for the opposite approach, I would suggest that from here we have a perfect solution to the question that was raised by Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. Rav Bibi Bar Abaye asked, what would be the din if a guy did something that is going to be mechayev him a karban chatas, right? So what happened? Well, he put a piece of bread to bake into an oven, not realizing that it was Shabbos. And, oh my God, now he realizes it's Shabbos. So he said, all right, I'm not going to bring a karban chatas. I'll simply take the bread out of the oven before it bakes. And then I'll never be chayev because the baking never took place. But remember that in those days, baking in an oven consisted of sticking the pitot against the side of the oven. The need was to remove the pitot from the oven, which is not easy to do, and is considered to be a chokhmah. It's not a malacha, but it's a chokhmah. Since it's a chokhmah, the chachamim said, look, it's too similar to a malacha. It takes a lot of thinking and expertise. They ushered it min rabbanan. Now, Rav Bibi Bar Abaye wanted to know, did the Rabbanan say you're not allowed to take down that bread because it would be an Isra of Rediyat HaPat, as it's called, even though it's going to cost you a Chiyav Chatas? Or did they not? Did they say, oh, well, we wouldn't want you to come with a Chiyav Chatas, so okay, in this case, you're allowed to take down the bread. Now, since over here it never occurred to anybody that the Rabbanan would take into consideration the issue of whether the guy is going to drop what was in his hands into the Rosh HaSarabim out of disgust, and therefore end up becoming Chayav Achatas, it seems quite clear that the Rabbanan don't care about the possibility that somebody would be Chayav Achatas, right? So we should be able to learn from here, Tifsho de lo hitiru. So let's prove from here that the Rabbanan don't care. Okay, fine, so do. What do I care? You've got a proof that nobody thinks that the Rabbanan cares, so fine. Alukashim a tifshot. Or, maybe not. I mean, maybe the whole issue is so totally different, really. Le'olam lo tifshot. Velokasha, the way to look at the answer of the stira between the two braitot. Now, As far as this is concerned, it does not seem to address the tifshot or lo tifshot, because however you answer the two brightot, you're not going to change the fact that it never occurred to anybody to look at the answer as being the difference between somebody ending up being chayav achatas or not. So we still have the ostensible answer to Rabbi Bibar Abaye's question, right? And therefore, Tosfos takes out the words lo tifshot because it's irrelevant to the pshita if you answer the two brightot. However, it may simply be pointing to the fact that the entire idea was ridiculous, because the din of rediat hapat is an extant iser. To ask whether the rabbanan created an iser is very different than saying whether they were matir, an existing iser. So you, even no matter what you would have said, it may not have nothing to do with this sugya anyway. All right. In any event, perhaps the difference between the two brightot would be the difference of whether he did the act b'shogeg or he did the act b'mezid. If he did the act of shogeg, of sticking his hand out of the window, not realizing that it was the avir of Rishut HaRabim, lo kansura rabbana. But b'mezid, they were kansura rabbana. Or maybe both cases were b'shogeg. And the question is whether in general, when we give a knas, now by the way, you'll note that the knas has suddenly changed. Previously, the knas was making his hand into a carmelite, which then prohibited him from bringing it back. Now we're not talking about whether hands are carmelites. Now we're talking about the simple question of whether the rabbanan perhaps just wanted to make you suffer for doing something that was similar to a malacha. So that would be a question of kansur shogeg atumezit, umar sever lo kansur shogeg atumezit, and there's even another solution. It's very possible there is no such knas, and there is no problem of the hand being the carmelite. The difference between the two brightot may be something else entirely. It's the question of what can you do with it other than leaving it out in the air. So the brightot had said, no, you are not allowed to bring it in. Does that mean not allowed to bring it into where it was? It means you're not allowed to bring it into somewhere where it wasn't. Now, this raises also another fundamental issue. The act of Otsar consists of two things: taking something out of where it is and putting it something into where you want it to go. Now, we're going to see whether taking something out is itself bichlal considered to be part of a malacha shetzricha lagufa or not. If you just want to get something away, let's say something stinks and you want to get it out of the house, you have no interest in transferring it to Rishus HaRabim. You only have interest in transferring it out of your Rishus HaYachid. That's something that we're going to discuss later. But the question over here of whether can you bring it back to where it started from? Yes. Because you didn't achieve anything. You stuck your hand out of the window and now you have to sheepishly take your hand back in. You'll notice that the other sheep here has not mentioned drinking once. And I'll bet I know why. Reduced to sheepishly shaking his head and not saying a word about taking a drink. You see, it's doable. Anyway, so he has to sheepishly take that hand back in and walk away like a fool, having achieved absolutely nothing. That he's allowed to do. But the brighter that says he's not allowed, that is, he's not allowed to put it into a different place, because that is too similar to what he thought of. Would it be mutter to bring your hand back into the same place that you took it out of? Yes, that's mutter. And could he put it into another chatzer other than the one that he was initially putting it into? No, that's aser. What's the difference? I mean, basically, he's taking it from Avi Rishus HaRabim and putting it into Rishus HaYachid. L'chitechu l'alakura d'milcha. I'll tell you, but only if you pay me. So I don't need much. I do need you to weigh out one kor of salt for me. I'll wait patiently until you do it, and then I'll give you the answer. That's wonderful. It's just like a cute way of saying, what, you just expect everybody to explain everything to you for free? And what exactly do you intend to do about it? That's one approach. The other approach is, man, you could pour a ton of salt over those two pieces And you still wouldn't be able to make them similar to each other. You'd taste the difference even with all that salt on it. What kind of dumb question is that? Of course it's not the same. Hatam lo ita vida makshafto. In the case where you're bringing it back to where you want it, he is not achieving anything. But if he gets it out of this chutz or puts it somewhere else, that is similar, at least a part of his makshava. And therefore, some other time, maybe you'll end up putting it in Dershus Rabin too, thinking that you get your way if you're just stubborn enough. And therefore, they asked it. Acha ita vida makshavtom. So I took a little bit of advantage of our extra time since I said I wasn't going to do the Mishnah. But I figured it's so beautiful to get these, the way that this Masechet starts arranging itself. It's worth a little bit of extra time at the beginning. And what was that question from Gavi? Yes, indeed. That is mentioned by the Rishonim as the difference between the two cases. Very good. But anyway, enjoy. Have a great Tainus Esther. Enjoy that fast, just feeling what it was Esther was going through too, even though obviously it wasn't the same day. And remember the Divrei Hatzomot V'Zaakatan. That becomes part of the Purim experience itself. It's very special, even though it's Kal from other Tainiot. It has a special chumrah, in a sense, an emotional chumrah, and that it gives you a direct sense of what it would be to be walking into Achashverosh mitoch HaTainius.